It's Friday, August 21st on the CBS Sports Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, and Thursday was a remarkably boring day.
Boring?
For baseball games.
I didn't find it boring.
Scott White didn't find it boring. Al Melchior, did you find it boring?
I did, to be honest. I think Scott maybe liked the underdog pitchers, because
Scott loves an underdog story.
There were a lot of bad pitchers, or at least pitchers we think of as bad, who did wonderful things. And a couple of them actually started to make me believe they're not so bad, after all.
Well, we will get to all of that in due time when we go through Thursday's games. But first off, I want to hit you with a quote of the day. If you can't spot the sucker in your first half hour at the table, you're the sucker. What movie is it from?
You already
I know you already look.
Yeah.
You already knew.
I know I've heard it before. I don't.
It's from the movie Rounders.
I haven't seen Rounders.
It's about the poker. But we're not going to talk about poker.
Okay, what are we talking about?
We're going to talk about the first two rounds of next year's fantasy baseball drafts.
Are there suckers there?
I'm sure there are. And we're going to find them.
I'm just trying to connect the quote to...
Well, because, like, rounds, you know? That's it. That's all it was.
The
name of the movie is Rounders. We're going to talk about the first two rounds.
These are first
the
two, and
the draft was
rounders.
A two-rounder.
It's a very tenuous connection, but I'm not nearly as clever as Adam Azer. So you really just have to go with me when I come up with these things.
Now, I've looked through the notes,
yes.
So I know we got a lot to get to. But the one thing I didn't see here was the home run we were talking about just before we started.
Michael Taylor's massive
Taylor
dong.
Swift exit from Coors Field.
The man after my own heart.
I can't believe you left it out.
All right, let's look at next year's fantasy baseball draft. Who is your number one pick, Scott?
My number one pick, and then I should point out the inspiration for this discussion is probably the fact that I just wrote and posted online a column projecting what I think the first two rounds should probably be. And at the very top of that list was Paul Goldschmidt.
Goldschmidt.
Yeah. Followed by,
Yeah, let's hear your top three. I think there's a clear top three.
There is a clear top three. I went Goldschmidt, Harper, and Trout. And I really wouldn't have an issue with anybody taking any of those three number one. I have Trout third because I think with the high strikeout rate, he has shown that he's probably the biggest batting average liability of the three. And he's not the best steals source of the three anymore either. That's Goldschmidt, and that's really why Goldschmidt's number one.
Your reasoning makes sense, but I still feel like you're going to catch some heat for it.
Okay.
For Trout falling to number three, what do you think, Al?
I completely agree with the order, and I'm not so sure that I buy into a steals repeat for Goldschmidt, but I think just the possibility that he can do this.
18, 15.
Yeah, it's been a couple years now.
909 games, and then 19 this season. This is a guy who's going to steal between 15 and 20 bases.
I guess that's probably a fair estimate for the new version of Trout as well.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not so much Goldschmidt has a steals advantage on him. It's just Trout no longer has a steals advantage on Goldschmidt.
I'm not sure Trout's going to be a steals guy, period, going forward. And that probably, you know, so we're sharing the same reason. To me, that's a difference maker for Trout because the argument always was all-around player, including speed. And his steals have gone from 33 to 16, and then so far this year, 10. And that's 10 out of 15, which isn't a horrid success rate, but it's not one that, you know, makes you think he's necessarily going to rebound next year either. So I could see, you know, next year he may struggle to have 10 for the whole year.
All right, so that top three is pretty set. How many pitchers go in the first round?
Well, I'm projecting two to go. Kershaw, obviously, I think. Anybody who doesn't have him in the first round hasn't been paying attention to the last few years. I put Scherzer in there also with the very last pick. And part of that's because I think there are only 10 legit first-round players. And so to fill out my first round, I wanted the safest of the remaining options. And I feel like Scherzer's that as opposed to, you know, some of the early second-round types. You got... you get the position scarcity guys like Troy Tulowitzki, Carlos Correa, Buster Posey. I'd be reluctant to build my team around them as, you know, as my top player, given their main advantage is the position they play.
Al, would you pick any other pitchers in the first round? Would you consider anybody else in the first round? Do you think it's crazy to take Scherzer with your first pick?
No, I don't think it's crazy, but I doubt I'll be doing it. And a lot has to do with it. I mean, remember, we've got a quarter of the season left. So a lot for me will depend on how the top tier pitchers finish, because Felix Hernandez, I think he could, you know, certainly resurrect a season, but his stock as of right now will fall dramatically. Chris Sale has been up and down, but when he's been up, he's been, I think, arguably the best pitcher in baseball.
Better than Kershaw?
At times, yeah.
At times. Everybody's been better than Kershaw's been unbelievable.
There was a period, I want to say maybe about a month and a half ago, where I thought that Sale might have overtaken him, because he was just as dominant could be. But, you know, then he had a stretch, you know, where he wasn't, you know, that good. And Kershaw, since the subpar beginning to the year, has been very consistent.
I mean, boy, you know, he's fallen off a cliff, man. 2.34 ERA.
So Kershaw's still my number one. But depending on what happens the final quarter of the season, I think that Sale, Scherzer, maybe DeGrom, maybe Felix if he rebounds. Those guys could David Price, who's very good right now. Those guys could close the gap.
Kershaw's 2.34 ERA is his second worst in the last 5 years. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that tidbit out there because he's just remarkable.
Yeah, so just because I don't think I've really clearly answered the question. If, you know, depending on which of those guys finish strong, they could be first-round candidates for me, but just as easily none of them could be.
I want to talk about a couple of guys. We'll move on from this pretty soon, but I want to talk about a couple more guys who have a lot to prove in the last month and a half of the season. Can Carlos Correa sneak into your first round if he finishes the season the way he's played since day one?
There is nothing I can't imagine there's anything Correa could do to have me take him in the first round next year.
Would you take Troy Tulowitzki in the first round?
Potentially at the back end, yeah. But then again, if it's the back end, I'm probably waiting till, you know, 13, 14.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, conceivably, I could, depending on how 1 through 12 play out. But Correa has, you know, obviously been amazing so far. But like I said, there's nothing he could do, because in a way, the better he plays from here on out, the more I'm going to worry that he's going to disappoint me next year by having just a merely good sophomore season.
Yeah. I mean, just think of how Yasiel Puig was as a rookie, and he was still a must-start option last year in his sophomore season, but for where people were drafting him following that rookie season, he was a disappointment. And that wasn't even first round. That was second round.
Well,
Brett Lawrie's another one who comes to mind. And he didn't get as many at-bats in his rookie season as Correa will have, but he looked like a guy who was going to be an early-round pick for years to come, and he's never been that since. Not that I'm predicting that Correa. It's just it's easy to put too much stock in a partial season from a guy who's kind of caught the league by surprise.
And Correa's on a 35 homer pace. I don't think anybody considers that to be realistic. But why can't he be a 25-25 guy next year?
He could.
Yeah.
But I'd rather
have him than Tulowitzki next season. And I don't think it's particularly close for me.
Are you going to go first round to do that?
If I pick 12th, I might.
Yeah.
Maybe I go 13. You know, maybe I take I take Scherzer at 12, Correa at 13. You know,
but the way
he's played right now and how talented I think he is, because we have to consider the fact that he's not. It's not like this is something that came out. He's not Matt Duffy. You know, this is a guy with a significant pedigree and a significant minor league track record, and all he's done as a professional is exactly what he's doing right now. Is there any way Kyle Schwarber gets second round?
I don't think so. I don't think so, for the same reason. And he actually has, you know, we haven't talked about it because he's been so busy hitting home runs, but he actually has some concerning
really high
underlying
strikeout
numbers.
Rate.
Yeah, striking out every third at bat.
Really high strikeout rate. And it's the same concern with Miguel Sano, that you could see a a Bryant-esque regression, or in a more extreme version, a Jock Peterson-esque fall off.
Yeah. Now, that being said, I do think Kyle Schwarber, regardless of how he finishes the season, will probably be my second catcher after Posey. But I'm anticipating it'll be a good 2, 3, 4 rounds after Posey goes.
All right. And rank these three third basemen for next season. Todd Frazier, Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado.
You have them. You just named them off in the reverse order I have them.
I didn't do it on purpose.
Machado, Arenado, who I both have in the first round.
I did them in alphabetical order.
Yeah, Machado, Arenado, who I both have in the
that
first round.
That was not alphabetical order at all. You just agreed to it without realizing that Arenado was second.
Yeah, okay. My bad. And then Frazier, third. But, you know, if Frazier gets hot, I could see him overtaking Arenado.
Yeah.
Arenado appears to be much safer right now, but the 1/4 of the season to go, that's a valid point. Machado's the one who I really feel like hasn't gotten enough credit for just how good he is now, because, I mean, not only has he emerged as the kind of power hitter he was projected to be since the Orioles took him third overall however many years ago, but he's stealing bases now.
He's hitting 300. He's cut his strikeout rate.
His strikeout rate's way down. He looks like an all-around player and somebody who, you know, maybe next year we're talking about him as a top 5 overall pick.
He just turned 23.
Exactly.
A month ago.
Exactly.
And he's in his fourth season in the majors.
I have him, I think, 8th or 9th in the first round. But that's only because that's just to protect myself from the possibility of a letdown for a guy who's never done this before. I think based on his pedigree and his progression up to this point, he is going to be a stud player for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree with all that, and I agree with the ranking as well.
And he plays in a good park. The only concern, I guess, is his knees.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's gotten through this season without
So far.
It's only August. But the fact that he's gotten through it so far is a good sign. Let's move on to some of the biggest news from Thursday. A lot, you know, I said yesterday was a boring day for baseball, despite Scott's disagreement.
Nah.
But a lot of news happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of pretty big, and we're at the point of the season where any injury could be a season ender. And we had a bunch of guys go on the disabled list. Anibal Sanchez, at least, does Anibal Sanchez going on the DL with a shoulder injury make you feel better about him next season? Is that weird?
No. I was going down the same path exactly, that it was hard to explain how he could just be so awful this year when I expected pretty good things from him. So potential explanation now.
At least it gives you a reason to think that maybe he might be better next season, right?
Yeah, it does. I mean, maybe more will come out about how long it was bothering him, and you know, that could either make it, that could either clear things up or make it murkier. But it's a possible explanation, which I like.
And kind of amazingly, he has a .278 BABIP, despite how bad he's been this season. That just tells you how many home runs he's given up.
Exactly. Yeah.
Marlon Byrd traded to the Giants, I guess this is in response to Hunter Pence's latest injury. Do you think Marlon Byrd plays regularly in San Francisco?
I think at least to start out he does. Now, when Pence returns, all bets are off.
Any interest in him whatsoever?
I think this pretty much, I'm not going to go as far as to say it kills his mixed league value, but it deals it a significant blow, because obviously he was playing in one of the best hitters parks. He had a .213 batting average and .686 OPS on the road this year, and the park he's playing in is probably the worst park he could go to. He's 37 years old, so
he's a pretty much all or nothing power hitter at this point in his career.
Yeah,
going somewhere where it's going to be mostly nothing and you know, play type concerns when Pence and Pagan come back.
Jeremy Hellickson placed on the disabled list as well. Chase Anderson recalled. Any interest in Chase Anderson getting the call back up?
Not really. I mean, if somebody dropped him in a very deep league, probably would have to be NL only. Sure, but that's about it.
All right. And Jake McGee never really challenged for the closer job in Tampa Bay like we expected when he came back from his injury this season. And he will not for the rest of the season. He underwent season-ending surgery for a torn meniscus in his knee. Makes Brad Boxberger a safer option down the stretch, but you know, I don't think that at this point, I don't think there was much concern about him losing his job anyway.
I was just starting to, because really, you know, for a month plus, he's not been very good.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, and earlier in the year, I mean, he, you know, blew some saves, but the peripherals were always pretty strong. But control's kind of gone in the tank lately, and it was getting a little harder to trust him. But at least now you figure he gets saves.
And the only other option that had been potentially mentioned as a replacement closer was Kevin Jepsen early in the season.
He gone.
He's gone. So, yeah, Boxberger's in a pretty safe place right now down the stretch. And the last big news item, Daniel Norris, I guess hitting a home run in his first major league at bat.
A little too much.
Big mistake.
You know, he swung a little too hard, and he's been placed on the disabled list with an oblique injury. And with obliques, that could be a season ender. You know, that's an injury that can take five to six weeks to get back from.
I mean, you can't just run a pitcher back out there the day you activate him.
Yep.
Well, the day he's ready to be activated. He's got to rehab.
Yeah, and the Tigers don't think really have much incentive to take any chances with Norris.
And that's exactly why I would be surprised if Anibal Sanchez pitches again this season.
Yeah.
Now, the guy that they could call up to replace Daniel Norris, Michael Fulmer, who was he was acquired in that David Price trade, I believe, and he's been very good this season.
It's the the Cespedes.
Oh, and the Cespedes deal. He was from the Mets, sorry.
Yep.
Any interest in him? He's got a 1.97 ERA and 109 and two-thirds innings between high A and mostly double A this season.
Yeah, crazy to think another Mets pitching prospect who is kind of under the radar because of so many, you know, good ones ahead of him. But no, I'm definitely interested in him in AL only, and I could see him being a guy if he starts off well, making a mixed league impact.
Yeah, former first round pick, former top 100 prospect, kind of fell off the prospect radar with a 4.39 ERA last season, but he's bounced right back, and he's only 22, so I think he is definitely someone that if they call him up, I think he's definitely someone you want to keep an eye on. Scott, do you have anything to add on Michael Fulmer?
Well, no, I was just looking at the numbers, and they reminded me a lot of another pitcher the Tigers acquired. In the David Price trade, Matt Boyd, what he's done in the minors this year. Seems like Fulmer has a little more of a pedigree. But, just like I was monitoring Boyd when he first got called up, I think the same is true for Fulmer. Obviously, it hasn't gone so well for Boyd so far.
Yeah, and I think the bigger difference would be a little better pedigree for Fulmer, but also he's doing it at a much younger age. He's been 2 years younger at every level than Matt Boyd. So I think that can make a difference because you have to consider the fact that the older pitcher is going to be a little more advanced at that stage. So Fulmer does have more upside, I would guess.
Before we move on, I just want to go back to we were talking about McGee, and then you mentioned Kevin Jepsen.
Mm-hmm.
I did see an item yesterday. It looks like Perkins thinks he could be back early next week. So
it's on there. It's on there later on.
Oh.
Yeah, Glenn Perkins is expecting to be back by next Tuesday. He had a cortisone shot in his neck. And, so that's one. There's a handful of closer situations around baseball that are not quite settled right now. And the Twins looked like that if Perkins was going to be on the shelf for a while. But the fact that Perkins is, because Jepsen just hasn't been particularly impressive since the trade.
Yep.
If Perkins does come back by next Tuesday, hopefully his neck is better. And he can settle things down in the ninth inning for them. If you've lost any of those players with injury, your season's probably not going the way you planned it at this point. It's week 21. You might have missed the playoffs by now. We're going to look ahead at week 21 if you're in the playoffs a little later. But if not, you should be playing FanDuel. You should have been playing FanDuel all season long. But now's your opportunity. Games start at just $1. To play one-day fantasy baseball, it's cheap and easy to play. Go to FanDuel.com, use our offer code CBSPod, If you use that code, FanDuel will match your first deposit dollar for dollar up to $200. That gets earned as you play. You will love playing FanDuel. I'm loving playing FanDuel right now because on our DF Live tournament, I've won 2 days in a row, fellas. And I had the worst pitcher among the bunch last night.
Yeah.
I went with Scherzer last night. You guys all went with either Archer or Arrieta. I think you all pretty
actually,
much went with Arrieta.
I did something wacky. I had the worst pitcher. I went with Corbin. Didn't work
out.
Yeah,
that would be the worst pitcher of that group.
Yeah.
Or of any group last night.
Pretty much everybody else went with Arrieta or Archer. Chris Towers still won his second in a row. If you want to hear our daily fantasy advice, stay tuned for the rest of the show. We'll try to get to some later. But also, watch DF Live at 4 p.m. Monday through Friday on CBSSports.com. Al Melchior will be on there today with Ryan Bass and Heath Cummings. I'm on there every once in a while. Scott's on there every once in a while. Scott, actually, if you didn't watch yesterday, Scott was on fire. Scott was a man possessed. Scott had zingers coming out of his pockets. He was making fun of Matthew Coca's apparently stinky breath. I don't know. I don't know why you would go there.
Well, he kind of set it up for me. I had to spike it.
You are a fantastic volleyball player. I can only imagine. And if you want to play FanDuel tonight, Adam Azer has two entries to the MLB rally. Tweet him at Adam Azer on Twitter, AIZER, and he will pick two people to get a free entry into the MLB rally. Who stood out to you on Thursday night?
Well, I want to start with a guy who I now believe could be a potential contributor for mixed leaguers down the stretch, Tyler Duffy.
Tyler Duffy.
Duffy
very
with
good
an
start.
E. Yes. Second good start in a row. Got some strikeouts again, 15 and 13 and two-thirds innings, those last two starts. And, you know, I read the recap. I saw both sides raving about his curveball. I looked at the PitchFX data, saw how much he threw his curveball. Then I played the highlight clip and actually watched him throw his curveball. And
does it live up to the hype?
It's a very impressive looking curveball. It moves dramatically. He throws kind of across his body, so that kind of puts a different angle on it too.
A little more slurvy, maybe.
Yeah, and he throws hard enough that I think I don't see it just being a kind of a gimmicky thing like Mike Bolsinger. He had a different kind of curveball, but it was also weird. And it just wasn't enough to sustain him. I think Duffy, especially looking at his minor league numbers and how good his control is, I think he has a better chance of sustaining that. And I'm interested in seeing where this is going. I wouldn't be opposed to taking a flyer on him now.
And that's a tough matchup.
Yeah,
playing against the Orioles at home, it's a good hitter's park. They're a good offense, and they've been, the last few games not so much, but prior to that, they've been really hot as a team. So it's a very impressive start.
Yeah, I'm not as eager to buy into Duffy. And it's just there's a mixed record this year. The last two starts have been extremely impressive. The first start, not at all. But again, if he had better minor league numbers, I'd be willing to.
You don't like his minor league numbers?
Well, what bothers me is that at AAA, he just stopped getting swings and misses and didn't really have great strikeout rates to start with. So I'm just wondering where this has come from in the last two starts. And, I mean, those are, some interesting observations about the curveball. I'm just wondering, where was the curveball in AAA? I have no answers.
And there's always a potential with minor league numbers that you have to take with a grain of salt, because every once in a while we'll see a situation where a guy gets sent down to the minors and is told, don't throw your best pitch. So
yep.
Duffy's best pitch is his curveball, and maybe at AAA they wanted him to work on his other pitches. It's possible that he wasn't throwing it, but that's a guess.
Well, but I mean, whether it's right or wrong, it points out the fact that, when you see an anomaly like that, you can't always know the reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, that said, I mean, it sort of depends on what kind of league. On a deeper league, there's nothing but upside to Duffy.
He's only 4% owned. So if you're in any type of league, you can probably add Tyler Duffy.
For most of my leagues, I'm not looking to add him yet.
Any other standouts for you guys on Thursday night? It was mostly pitchers.
Yeah, mostly positive, but it was the pitchers you didn't expect to perform well that did. And probably for me, the biggest standout in a negative way was Patrick Corbin. As I mentioned, I mean, I liked what he'd done lately so much that I actually took the plunge with him. And Grant, this was not very smart, but sometimes I get bored and I do stupid things. And I started him in a cash lineup last night in DFS.
It did not go well.
And it did go well at all.
Two innings, four earned runs allowed, eight hits, two strikeouts for Patrick Corbin.
Yeah. That said, I mean, I looked through, all the news stories overnight to see if there's an explanation. And there was really nothing there other than just he didn't have his best stuff. And he really had been, quite good in the several starts before this. So he's got a two-start week coming up. I know we'll talk about that a little later on. But I'm just going to chalk it up as to a bad start that everybody has.
I'm actually feeling – I know he's given up a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. But I like what I've seen from John Lamb.
Yep, I was going to bring that up. 15 strikeouts in 11 and a third innings, only two walks through his first two career starts.
Those are the exact numbers I wanted to point out.
I got you.
Yeah, and unlike Tyler Duffy, he was a strikeout pitcher in the minors, and he is a former top prospect, fell off because of a lengthy recovery from Tommy John surgery where he had trouble regaining his velocity, but it's kind of come back this year, and I think he's been overlooked by the prospect community based on the numbers he had at AAA, so I'm not saying you need to own him in mixed leagues because I don't think there's much demand for him, but he's a guy I'm definitely keeping on my radar. A much higher-end guy who we've spoken of mostly negatively this year. I don't feel like his owners think of him in a negative way because his win-loss record is so good. But Colin McHugh,
yep,
is the pitcher. And this wasn't the most impressive start in his last four. I think he only had four or five strikeouts.
Yes.
But he went up in that game against Chris Archer, where Archer obviously stole the spotlight with one hit, 11 strikeouts in nine innings. But McHugh, this is a four-start run for him now, where the biggest problems I had with him before, too many hits, not enough strikeouts, have suddenly gone away. 26 strikeouts to 22 hits in 27 innings during those four starts. And that's much closer to the guy we saw last year, the one I was so excited about drafting this spring.
Yeah.
So I feel like I don't know what changed, and maybe I'm reading too much into a four-start stretch, but based on what he did last year, I'm enthusiastic about the way he could finish this season.
All right. We had some elite pitchers doing elite pitcher things last night. Jake Arrieta remains – we talked about him Monday, last time he started. And six innings, four hits, no runs, one walk, seven strikeouts, 12 straight quality starts, 86 innings pitched, 1.26 ERA, 81 strikeouts in that 12-start stretch. Opposing hitters are hitting 166 with a 486 OPS against him in that stretch. Is he a top 10 pitcher in baseball right now?
Yes. I know Alice.
I have him
not quite there yet.
I think just below. But I want to say maybe 12th or so. We can look it up.
Now, Scott, is he top 8?
I'd have to pull up my rankings. He's in the neighborhood,
okay,
for sure. And it's interesting. This year is one thing, obviously.
This is exactly his season overall. When you take into account this incredible run, but also what he did before when he was still very good.
Yeah, he was very good last year.
Yeah,
he looked like an emerging ace, and that's exactly what he's been. But I get the impression, for whatever reason, he's not valued as such by the fantasy baseball community as a whole. When I put together these first two rounds, I did a lot of crowdsourcing on Twitter and just, feeling out the way people were perceiving these players going into next year, because ultimately that's going to drive where they're getting drafted. And you know, I threw a few pitcher names out there, guys like Jacob deGrom and Corey Kluber, David Price, even Felix Hernandez, ones you might consider taking in those first two rounds. And Arrieta was among them, and consistently people were putting Arrieta on the end. I would probably, if I was ranking them, and the three pitchers that showed up in the first two rounds were Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale. Those are the three that actually made it. DeGrom seemed to be universally considered the fourth guy, and I'm fine with that. I would probably go Kluber sixth, and depending on where David Price lands, how Felix Hernandez finishes this season, whether or not Jose Fernandez comes back, I might have Arrieta there seventh.
Let me point one thing out.
Okay.
Jake Arrieta has only thrown 324 and two-thirds innings over the last two seasons. So I guess some of the skepticism is about, well, we don't know how good he is. It's still a small sample size. It's two seasons of a mid-2 ERA. Chris Sale's only thrown 331 innings over the last two seasons. Jacob DeGrom's only thrown 294 and two-thirds in the majors. Gerrit Cole's only thrown 293. Steven Strasburg's thrown 296. He's second in baseball in FIP since the start of the 2014 season.
Mm-hmm.
It's
after Kershaw.
It's Kershaw who's 198.
Yeah.
A massive chasm. But Chris Arrieta's 245. He's right there with Chris Sale and Corey Kluber.
I think he was last year alone, too.
Yeah, he's been remarkable. And it's not like
strikes out, high strikeout rate, low walk rate, doesn't give up home runs.
What does Jacob DeGrom do that Jake Arrieta doesn't? Nothing. They have identical strikeout rates, identical walk rates, and Jake Arrieta has a higher ground ball rate.
I don't know what the argument for
DeGrom over Arrieta is.
I think Jacob DeGrom starts maybe, his best starts maybe a little flashier. I don't think Arrieta's had more than 10 strikeouts in a game this year, but obviously very consistent because the strikeout rate is more than a strikeout per inning, you know?
Plenty of
strikeouts.
I've got DeGrom ahead of Arrieta, and I didn't have an answer when you asked that maybe hypothetical question. But I think Scott answered it because DeGrom did have a period early on when he got bombed.
Yeah.
I don't think Arrieta's really had that this year. He was sort of consistently for the first, I would say, 2 to 3 months, just a cut below where he was last year. And then he's taken it up a notch since then. But it's just been, you know, steady excellence. I have him. I was wrong. I said I thought I'm 12th. I have him 14th. And by my count, I have five pitchers ranked ahead of him that Scott doesn't. Cueto, DeGrom, Strasburg, Cole, and Harvey. I think based on what he's done this year, there's an argument that I could drop Harvey behind him. I'll stand by the others.
I really think there's an argument that Jake Arrieta is a top five pitcher. And I think there's a lot of bunchiness.
Yes, there absolutely is.
The non-Kershaw pitchers, I think. I guess Kershaw, Sale, and Scherzer, there's a lot of bunchiness after that. But
yeah,
it just goes to show how good Arrieta's been.
Yeah, no, you say top five. I think there's a group of four that are above the rest, with, you know, Kershaw being above everybody, and then Sale, Scherzer, and Price. But yeah, after that, it's really hard to separate them.
All right, Max Scherzer. We'll go to Chris Archer first. 9 innings, complete game, 1 hit, 11 strikeouts, 1 walk, and there was some concern that he got off to such a good start, but he's never. I think he had a couple of bad starts. He doesn't have the huge innings load in the past to say that you can count on him going deep into the season. Well, 2.85 ERA since the All-Star break, 58 strikeouts, 12 walks, and 47 in the third innings.
Yeah, he's kind of the I wouldn't say the anti Arrieta because
yeah,
they're both stud pitchers, obviously. But the way Archer's gone about it, he does have plenty of those flashy starts, but then he also has those outings like the previous one where he gave up 7 earned runs. There's been several of those sprinkled in. But
he
is kind
over
of annoying,
the 200
I guess,
strikeout.
But you got to love what he's giving you overall.
He's over the 200 strikeout mark, and yeah, if he's your number one pitcher next season, how are you feeling?
Okay.
Merely okay. You know, sort of like I would have felt with Cole Hamels this year. Like, he's viable, but not as exciting as the the top 10 options.
And Max Scherzer went 6 innings, 8 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. It's a pretty mess start, except it came in Coors Field. It's pretty good.
Yep. And there was, you know, an explanation for his recent struggles after his last start. He talked about how his arm angle had changed and his fastball was flat and it was getting pummeled. So he was going to, I think he said it was going to take him throwing 10,000 times against a wall, but he was going to get it sorted out. And I looked to see if he had any comment on it after this start, which appeared to be, given the circumstances, much better.
Yeah.
He didn't, which would lead me to believe probably he fixed things. So that's what I'm going with right now.
All right, but you know he had given up 16 earned runs in 21 innings in his previous 4 starts, but he still had 29 strikeouts and 7 walks. We're not worried about Max Scherzer anymore, right?
No.
If you were at all.
No.
All right, let's move on. Would you rather have Josh Tomlin, who has 11 strikeouts in 2 innings or and 2 walks in 13 innings after going 7 strong with 1 run allowed against the Yankees last night, or Tyler Duffy?
I'd rather have Tyler Duffy.
There's some
by a lot.
Yeah.
By a lot.
I don't know how Tomlin, I mean, this is like a miracle that Tomlin put up those kinds of numbers against the Yankees.
Yeah.
Because that's a terrible matchup for him. You know, we were talking before the podcast, and, you know, I looked up the stat. He's given up 7 hits so far in those 2 starts.
Yeah.
3 home runs. That's kind of an extreme microcosm of Tomlin's career. He's been pretty good for whip at times.
Yeah.
That's the Tomlin thing.
Doesn't walk anybody, gets a lot of fly ball outs, but, you know, the flip side of those fly balls pretty much decimates most of his fantasy value.
I think he has the potential to be, and obviously he doesn't have near the track record. He's coming back from, I think, a shoulder surgery and an elbow surgery. He's had arm problems for just, you know, he doesn't throw very hard, so it's kind of strange. But I think he has the potential to be a Bartolo Colon type pitcher where he'll have these kinds of starts.
Yeah.
Home runs are not common no matter who's pitching. It's just not a thing you see a lot of in a baseball game. So when he's able to avoid the home runs, maybe just by random chance, he'll have a start like this because his control is so good. But when
it's hard to trust him,
yeah, he'll get pummeled.
I actually think home runs are common when Matt Shoemaker was pitching.
Yeah.
All right, Scott. I don't want to pick on you.
Okay.
But your Texas Rangers stack last night did not work out.
No,
so well.
It didn't. No.
Process over results. Alfredo Simon threw a complete game one-hit shutout
against the Rangers last night. Left-handed hitters.
Alfredo Simon had allowed 4 or more earned runs in 9 of his previous 10 starts.
Yeah.
That is just the ultimate fluke. He is somehow still owned in 35% of CBSSports.com leagues. I'm going to guess that's the owners who had Alfredo Simon early in the season, and he was so bad. He's been so bad this season that he cost them the season and they've just given up.
That's
the only explanation I can find for still having Alfredo Simon on your team. This start does not make you want to pick Alfredo Simon up, right?
No.
All right, would you rather have Charlie Morton, who went 6 2/3, he struck out 30 batters in his last 25 inning pitched over his last 5 starts, or Wade Miley, 39 strikeouts, 15 walks in his last 7 with a 3.47 ERA? Miley allowed 1 earned run last night against the Royals. And yeah. 6 strikeouts in 7 1/3 is very impressive against the Royals.
Yes, it is. And Miley's had his moments this year. I mean, I'm going to pick Morton out of the two, but it's pretty close. You know, they're both ground ball pitchers who don't really have a whole lot else going for them. I'm not really trusting the strikeout
jump in strikeout rate for any of them.
For Morton, yeah. But yeah, Miley actually, I think since April, has been kind of chugging along with the mid-3s ERA. He's been okay, but not good enough.
Not the steadiest way of going about it. A lot of 1 earned runs and then 5 earned runs.
Yeah, so too much implosion potential to trust him. I guess you could say the same for Morton. He's had stretches, especially initially this year, where he was very good, but just too erratic and not very good against lefties still. So if you make me pick one, I'm picking up Morton. And just one more observation on Morton, too. Not as many ground balls lately, and he's actually just a little bit abandoning the sinker. He's still throwing it at one of the higher rates in the major leagues, but It's not the highest anymore.
Not quite leaning on it so heavily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Were there any other – there wasn't really any other impressive pitchers. It was a lot of guys who are not very good who just didn't give up a lot of runs yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention the John Lamb analysis. Missed opportunity. He did not face Jake Lamb.
That is disappointing.
Yeah.
That is
– Silence of the Lambs.
Exactly.
There you go.
Could have been.
Three up. Neil Walker hitting 275 with an 810 OPS since the All-Star break. He got off to a pretty slow start, but he has 9 home runs since July 1st. He had a 2-run home run yesterday. Do we feel comfortable starting him moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know. If there was a hot hand play like, you know, Chase Utley in a week he's facing a bunch of righties, or Hector Olivera gets called up, potentially Monday, by the way. I saw that.
That's in the injuries news and notes.
And, you know, I'm a Walker owner and I pick him up. You know, I don't think Walker's untouchable, but at the same time, I feel okay starting. I've felt okay starting him all year.
He only had four or five home runs in the first 3 months of the season. And there was some talk that last year's home run total was such an outlier, but he's on that pace since July 1st, so that's promising.
Yeah.
Are we picking up Marcell Ozuna's second home run in as many games? He had 317 in AAA, and he hit this one basically, I believe it might have bounced on top of the foul pole in left field.
So he skied it.
It was a bomb, yeah. Are we believing in him? 35% owned. Are you picking him up in mixed leagues?
I wouldn't say necessarily I'm believing in him, but no, I'm definitely picking him up just in the hopes that he can go back to what he did last season. And he's off to a good start.
What about in a points league? Because he kind of strikes me as that Chris Davis home runner bust type that I just have no interest in a points league because – Too much potential for a very low point total.
He's been walking a little more this season, but not enough that it's going to save him in a points league. You kind of do need.
Plus three outfielders versus five. That's consideration between the formats also.
You kind of do need him to homer to have much appeal.
I actually already have picked him up in 1-3 outfielder points league with the intention of, you know, stashing him and seeing if he does provide that requisite power. So it's a very speculative move, but you know, last year I was starting him in that kind of format, so I think he could be relevant there again.
I was referring to Chris Davis with a K, by the way, in case that wasn't clear.
That makes sense.
We need to make that distinction a little more often, I think.
We got to figure out a different way to pronounce it.
Well, I think K-Ris works.
K-Ris.
Yeah.
Davis versus but Chris Davis.
I don't know. I think K-Ris sounds kind of like cool, like. Like you're in the inside circle,
like the rapper KRS-One. That's obviously who you're referring to.
That guy, yeah, that's my favorite.
Marcell Ozuna on Hit Tracker Online. His home run was 412 feet. It landed like 5 or 6 degrees to the left of the in fair play, like designator. So that tells you how much he hooked that one. And Chris Coughlin. Two more runs, two more RBI yesterday. He's only 23% owned. He is second base eligible now because he's been playing there for the Cubs. He's only playing against right-handed pitchers, so
that's the
concern. But he's hitting .288 with 3 home runs and 10 RBI in August.
I know. I like him. I like him. But I just have a hard time believing I'd use him that often. Maybe as a middle infield option in a roto league.
Yep.
That's it.
I've got him ranked 30th at second base. So I've got him behind Dietrich, who's probably actually going to play more and I think has more power. Enrique Hernandez and other current and past Marlins, I'm sure.
So he's got to move down, though, right?
What's that?
Enrique, because he's not going to play anymore.
Probably.
I mean, well, maybe some against lefties.
Yeah, it remains to be seen because he could play a little third, could play some center field. That was part of the impetus for the Utley trade. Was to allow Hernandez to maybe take some playing time away from Jock Peterson. But, yeah, depending on how it plays out, I could wind up dropping him behind Coughlin.
All right, and two down. We'll move on really quickly after this. Torrey Hunter is still 76% owned, but he is 1-for-26 with 1 strikeout in his last 8 games. That was actually going into last night. And he was 0-for-3 last night. So he is 1-for-29 for his last 29 with 11 strikeouts in his last 9 games.
I'd call him a sit next week because the Twins are among the toughest matchups going against the Rays and Astros rotations in a 6-game week. I think that clinches it for him.
And Anthony Rendon, 0 multi-hit games since August 3rd. He's hitting 8-for-48 with 1 extra base hit in that time. And he was given 2 games off prior to yesterday. Are we sitting Anthony Rendon?
I'm probably not.
Would you, if you had Neil Walker and Anthony Rendon, would you start Neil Walker?
I'm probably sitting Rendon, but not because of this, because of how Matt Williams is responding to this.
He's sitting him.
Yeah. And as with Chris Coughlin, who's been a lot more productive than Rendon so far, if you're not playing every day, you're not in my mixed league lineup.
Well, yeah, I guess I need to look and see how this goes. If he plays every game this weekend, I imagine I'll start him.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, you briefly alluded to your best and worst Week 21 hitting matchups. Why don't you hit us with a little more hot data?
Hot data.
Hot dats.
Okay, well, the 5 best matchups for this week, like the Pirates, the Mets, the White Sox, the Cardinals, and the Rays. Now, a couple points here. The Pirates and the White Sox both face 4 left-handers in a 7-game week, and a lot of their hitters have unfavorable splits against left-handed pitchers. A lot of the fringy types who you'd be starting based on them having good matchups, like Adam Eaton and Melky Cabrera for the White Sox, like Jung Ho Kang and Gregory Polanco for the Pirates. Pedro Alvarez, surprisingly, is hitting about .300 against lefties this year. Huh. I don't know how much he's been playing against them lately.
And that could go down with Josh Harrison and Jordy Mercer. Things are about to get very crowded in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
With those two guys potentially returning as soon as this weekend series.
So I wouldn't say I'm excited about starting Alvarez, but he's hit a couple home runs in the last week, and I don't think the 4 lefties are a deal breaker for him necessarily. Some hitters I actually do like based on these matchups. I like Stephen Piscotty. I like him just in a general sense.
You do. You're a Piscotty maniac.
I mean, the number of extra base hits he's gotten, if you project them over a full season, it's like 75. Nobody gets that many extra base hits. Only 2 of them are home runs, but yeah. I have to figure he has the potential for more if he's showing extra base power. And in a points league, extra base hits count for something on their own. As Drubal Cabrera, who's been on fire since his return, with the Rays matchups, I think I'm willing to bet on him keeping that up for at least 1 more week. Somebody who's not in the best matchups here, but still good matchups. The Royals have good matchups. 6 out of 7 righties, so Mike Moustakas is back in. The Astros face nothing but righties, which would normally be reason to start Preston Tucker, except lately the Astros have been not consistent in what playing time they give him. He's starting about half the time and not necessarily against all righties, so I think he's probably out for mixed leagues this week. Worst matchups, the Red Sox are worst, followed by the Twins, Giants, Indians, and Diamondbacks.
Now, the key for the Red Sox, how many lefties?
2.
2 lefties. So that's not too bad. You're probably still playing David Ortiz.
Well, the final 3 of their 6 games are in the NL.
Okay.
Now, last time they were in the NL, which was just a couple weeks ago, it was for 2 games, and Ortiz started both at first base. But Travis Shaw has changed the picture a little since then, I would guess.
Yeah, but Ortiz is hitting so well that it's hard to see them taking him out of the lineup, right?
I agree. I'd be more likely to shy away from Shaw as a trendy sleeper pickup than Ortiz. And it's possible they both play in Pablo Sandoval sits.
Yeah.
That's another possibility. But the uncertainty of all of it makes me kind of wary of all 3, especially since they're bad matchups. other hitters I don't like this week. I mentioned the Giants. All those games are at home. So even though it's a bunch of righties, kind of a deal breaker for Brandon Belt, I think, in standard mixed leagues. Also Marlon Byrd, safe to say you're not going to enjoy his first week in a Giants uniform. For the Twins, they have a lot of fringy type hitters. Byron Buxton, I don't think there's any reason to gamble on him.
He went hitless in his return yesterday, hitting 175 so far in the majors.
Probably Trevor Plouffe is out in a standard mixed league. Probably not Miguel Sano. I think he's just been a little too...
You're starting Miguel Sano no matter what, right?
Yeah,
now.
I think so. I guess that'll do it.
All right, Al.
Two-star pitchers.
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
They haven't been great lately. Are you starting Jeff Samardzija with two starts against the Red Sox and Mariners?
Yes.
You are?
I am. I
feel like he could get absolutely bombed in those two starts.
He could, but if I'm bothering to roster Jeff Samardzija, unless...
You got to start him in a two-star week.
Exactly, unless I'm totally stacked.
And Julio Teheran. And actually, let's throw Alex Wood in there. Are you starting Julio Teheran against the Rockies and Yankees at home, and are you starting Alex Wood against the Reds and Cubs?
I know Teheran has good stats at home, but and the Rockies typically aren't that great away from Coors. I don't worry about that.
This season, though.
Yeah, and I just don't trust Teheran, period, and I think the Yankees in particular could really beat up on him. So, again, he's highly owned, so you could make the argument, well, if you own him, but I'm not owning Julio Teheran, so... I don't trust him in this two-start week. Alex Wood, I think he's good to go.
All right, and who are some other two-start pitchers worth streaming?
Well, here's the thing,
the lower end.
Yeah, we just talked about pitchers you probably already own. Those are the ones you're going to need to rely on because there's pretty much nobody who's available in more than 30% of our leagues that I completely trust. it's slim pickings and a lot of high risk. In the shallow league, Nathan Eovaldi, who was supposed to have two starts this week, lines up again for two next week with the Astros and the Braves. I love that. But he's probably not available in most leagues. Patrick Corbin, who we talked about earlier, I'm going to forgive him last night's start. He's got the Cardinals and the A's at home. The A's in particular should make that, you know, at least a decent week for him.
You don't hold any grudges.
Not with Patrick Corbin. Yeah. And then... couple more highly owned guys, but I think they're worth talking about because I think people may go the wrong way with each of them. Jared Weaver, who, you know, pretty much was dead to me fairly early in the season. He's been much better since coming off the DL. But, Chris, you and I talked about something earlier today that he actually could be the biggest strikeout surger rest of season, and not just because he's been getting them in his recent starts, but even earlier in the year, he was getting swings and misses at a rate that was right around league average. So even though he, you know, throws 84, he's been deceptive, and whiff rate is a really, really strong predictor of strikeout rate. And he is just an outlier that makes no sense. So, but he has the Tigers and the Indians on the road. I really worry a lot about those matchups because while he might get strikeouts, he still also, I think, will give up home runs.
Yeah.
But Weaver, you know, is somebody to consider. He's certainly not my first choice. Nate Karns versus Minnesota and Kansas City in Tampa Bay. Let me see. Here it is. I was really surprised to find this because I was ready to recommend him because he's very homer prone. And I figure, okay, Tropicana Field. This is going to be great for him. He has a 4.04 home ERA.
Huh.
That doesn't look the least bit fluky. So I actually would try to avoid Karns this week, again, unless you're absolutely desperate. So not much, you know, really positive to say even about those guys. And then if we go a little bit deeper, Derek Holland, 50%, great first start. Tough matchups, though. Toronto and Baltimore in Texas. But in terms of the guys who are available, he's as safe a bet as anybody.
What about John Lamb? I know he's got the Dodgers, and that doesn't look great, but he's a lefty.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers offense has been pretty stinky for about a month and a half now.
Yeah. potentially, you know, it's interesting you put that spin on that. You know, the Dodgers not that great against lefties, and they faces the Brewers, a bad park for Lamb, but the Brewers, at least early in the year, I know they weren't doing well at home, certainly recently, didn't look that great at home. I just don't feel safe in the standard mixed league trusting Lamb. You get him in some better, you know, pitcher's parks. I would take a flyer on him for two starts, but not this particular week.
Lamb's got the chops.
You think he's got the chops?
Yeah.
Nice.
Hi-yo.
Scott thinks he won't be that bad.
Let's run through injuries, news, and notes.
Okay, one
getting,
more guy?
Oh, one more guy, one more
All
guy.
Right, because this is deep league spectacular. Jorge De La Rosa at Atlanta, at Pittsburgh. Just like Carnes has been surprisingly mediocre at home, De La Rosa pretty good on the road, 3.17 ERA.
Not surprising that he'd be bad at home.
Not yet. That's not the surprising part. But I didn't think he was that good on the road, and he's been getting strikeouts.
All right, let's run through some injuries, news, and notes. Randall Delgado could start for the Diamondbacks on Saturday. As Scott mentioned, Hector Olivera could be called up by the Braves on Monday, hitting .291 with a .751 OPS in 25 minor league games this season. Are we adding him in every league?
Probably not the standard head-to-head, every team only starts one.
But the one where you need a middle infielder?
Yeah, the league where you need a middle infielder, I'm probably adding him. I think he's better than those minor league numbers. It's not a very long period of time.
And it's been a lot of stop-start. He got traded. He's had a couple of injuries.
Yeah. I read a scouting report from Baseball America recently that made me think I've completely underestimated his power potential.
They like him?
Yeah, they think he has middle-of-the-order power.
All right, well, that's...
They know more than
what
I
you're
do.
Paying for when you go for $60 million.
Yeah.
Josh Harrison and Jordy Mercer could be back this weekend. That complicates things for the Pirates in about five different spots, mostly because of Josh Harrison. Giancarlo Stanton, we don't think Junko Gong's going to lose playing time to Jordy Mercer, right?
I wouldn't think so.
All right. Giancarlo Stanton is aiming for September 1st, but he's still dealing with some lingering soreness in that wrist. But this is the closest we've had to a concrete date. Alberto Chiaspo was DFA'd. Mark Teixeira missed his second straight game with a deep bone bruise on his shin. Dustin Pedroia is not aiming for a return before September 10th. Can you drop Dustin Pedroia at that point?
Well, I mean, it depends, I guess, if you have him in a DL spot or a bench spot.
Yeah, if you have him on a bench spot, that's what I mean.
It probably depends who your alternative at second base is. When he comes back September 10th,
Hector
I expect
Olivera.
Him to be must start. I don't think if Olivera is all I had to fall back on, I'd be willing to drop Pedroia.
All right. Alex Gordon to begin a rehab assignment Sunday. Vincent Velasquez was recalled to the Astros bullpen. Josh Hamilton placed on the DL with a knee injury. Nori Aoki returned from the DL. And Brandon Phillips' bicep injury could require a few more than just a few days. Let's get to some emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. If you want us to read your email on the show, we're going to run through some of these very quickly. Dear Buzzcut, McVicker, and Van Dreessen, if you haven't already dropped Eduardo Rodriguez, you may want to consider just sitting him on day starts and set. The day-night splits are startling, and that's from Gary in Littleton, Massachusetts. Had you guys realized that about Eduardo Rodriguez?
No, I didn't, although it's funny because because we have TVs on during the day, and it does seem like every time I've watched him bomb, it's been during the day.
Work.
So that's very interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
It's not a split we usually give much attention to, and I don't know. Oh, my goodness. 167 versus 1067.
That's pretty extreme.
Nine starts versus six.
Maybe
nine
he's,
for the 167.
Maybe he just... I don't know.
Gets
maybe
hot.
He's just not a morning person. I can relate.
Pitching in the sun is hot.
I can relate. My night podcasting is way better.
I mean that makes sense though, right? I mean, just pitching in the heat. I mean,
yeah,
it takes a greater toll on your body.
I guess.
I'm surprised we don't see more of it now that I'm talking about it.
I guess I could see that.
But you know, I mean, yeah, biorhythmically, it just might not be a good fit. For Rodriguez. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Jake writes in, Dear Nerd Sesh, I have officially dropped Rougned Odor for Chris Coughlin in a 10-team roto league. Odor just doesn't steal, and I don't think he's a mature enough hitter to hit with consistent power at this point in his career. Is this a crazy thing to do? Jake, I think it's crazy.
When people say, is this crazy? This is crazy.
Chris Coughlin doesn't steal either.
You're not a mature enough fantasy player, Jake.
Whoa, wow.
He's the one who brought maturity into the equation here, all right?
Dear Alton, Kevin, and the chairman.
I don't know what that is, but.
You don't?
No.
You guys don't watch Iron Chef America.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's the only.
The only network I watch is Food Network.
Isn't it Alton or is it Alton?
Yes.
Okay.
David in New York City, I'm 2 points out of first, and I need a boost of quality production from shortstop and middle infielder down the stretch. Anthony Rendon and Hanley Ramirez have been absolutely killing me all year, and I'm really tempted to cut bait. Would it be crazy to outright drop either or both of them for Derek Dietrich, Eugenio Suarez, Jed Lowry, or Eric Ibar?
I never say that people are crazy. This is crazy. I could understand. And especially Suarez, Lowry, and Dietrich, all guys that I'd want to own, but not that expense.
All right. From Dio, dear Spencer Strasmore, Ricky Garrett, and Charles Green. You guys watching HBO's Ballers?
G-R-E-A-N-E, Green.
Yeah. It's a great show.
Okay.
Best rest of season, Hamill, Samardzija, or Corbin?
I'm going Corbin.
I'm going Hamill.
Dear, another person after my own heart. Dear Bad Blood Wonderland and Tim McGraw. Yes, Taylor Swift has a song called Tim McGraw. Since Adam isn't on the show, it seems like a good time for a keeper question. 12-team, 6x6 category league where we can only keep four. Who do you keep? You lose a round each year, but you can keep as long as you want. Bryce Harper in the first round. Josh Donaldson in the third, Jacob deGrom in the sixth, Jose Abreu in the eighth, Brian Dozier in the 10th, Jose Fernandez in the 13th, and Matt Harvey in the 21st.
Whoa.
That is some keeper potential.
All right, well, I'm definitely keeping Harper.
Yeah.
At
what point in the first round would you have to draft where it wouldn't make sense to keep Bryce Harper if you think he's the second player off the board? Like, I guess if you get the first pick in your draft, then it's a negative net value move. But other than that,
some of these guys are all of these guys were in consideration to go in the first two rounds. And five of them, more than he can actually keep, are. So it's such great value. I kind of feel like I could just live without Bryce Harper
to load my
team around these guys.
I would definitely want Dozier and Jose Fernandez.
The 10th and 13th. Harvey in the 21st.
See, I was thinking those were the two guys I don't want.
Really? Because
great value. It's amazing value.
Dozier could be the number one second baseman.
I'd rather have Harvey than Fernandez with an 8-round difference. I think Fernandez is better, but the risk, there's huge risk.
I'm keeping all four of the latest guys. Abreu, Dozier, Fernandez, Harvey. They're also the worst four players, but I feel pretty good about getting one of those other three back just in the normal draft.
I'm going to guess Mike from Pittsburgh's team is doing really well this season.
Yeah, I would guess that too. And probably because he kept guys like Abreu, Dozier, and Harvey last year and was able to build a very strong team around them.
I think I would swap out Abreu for Harper, but it's hard to really argue against what Scott's doing too. So it's either way, I think you're set.
All right. I think it makes sense to talk a little forward looking at this point in the season because, the people who aren't in the playoffs, let's give them something to keep listening to. We want everybody to be involved on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast.
Yeah.
Azer might come back on Monday and tell you all that that's a really dumb idea. But as long as I'm in charge on Fridays, that's what happens.
We get to badmouth them.
I'm not going to badmouth anyone. Scott's the badmouther.
You know Adam's not going to listen to the podcast this deep into the.
That's true. He's not going to listen
he won't hear this.
Minute 64. That's going to do it for us. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday with more Week 21 talk, more DFS talk. Listen to Daily Fantasy Live at 4 p.m. on CBSSports.com again. For Scott White, now I'm out of New York.